Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is tech genius Jonathan Strickland.
Wow, deja vu. Wow, deja vu.
Wow, deja vu.
Yeah, listeners, this is probably, what, like the third or fourth attempt we've had to just record the intro?
I think it's the fourth. Yeah. But that's par for the course for us, kind of.
So we launched Riverside, which is the software we use, or the web app we use in order to record these things, because, again, we still haven't figured out a way where two people living in the same metro Atlanta area can get together and record in person.
To be fair, we're like, if there's traffic, an hour to an hour and 15 apart.
That's true. Yeah. While we technically live in the same metropolitan area, we are not close to each other. And there's a lot of traffic and heavy highways between us.
If there's no traffic, it's like 20, 25 minutes, which is not so bad.
But we record on Fridays. Friday in Atlanta, rush hour starts at around 5 a.m. and ends on Sunday. So anyway, all that aside, we had technical issues. Ariel was getting an echo for a while. The wrong microphone was getting picked up on my side, where I could not figure out what happened. And it's probably because I installed a new mic stand that was putting some tension on the cable and thus making the cable loose. So Riverside was like, oh, well, can't use that microphone. So there was a whole list of issues. We think we've got them sorted, which is good, because we've got a ton of stuff to talk about this week, including things that we personally watched or experienced.
Yes. So other than microphone shenanigans, Jonathan, what have you watched or experienced?
Well, Ariel, I'm sure this will come as a huge surprise to you. As if we had not had this very conversation just like 10 minutes ago. But yeah, last night I watched the second half of season 2 of Invincible. You know, we both had watched the first half of season 2, and I saw that season 2 part 2 was available, probably had been for a while. I don't know when it actually went up, but I decided I'd watch an episode. And then I decided to watch another episode. And then I thought, well, there's only 4 episodes for the second half of the season, so why not go ahead and watch all 4? So I did. And I'm here to tell y'all, if you are a fan of Invincible, it might be the strongest half season so far. Hmm. It's definitely heavy and emotional. And depending on which characters you really like, you might be really upset as the series goes on. Some very not great things happen to some characters. But the other big thing was that they set something up that I thought was going to pay off in the finale, and it did not. The thing they set up is unresolved, which to me says that there will have to be a season 3 to resolve that particular part of the story. Which, as I understand it, goes along with the comics. I never read the comic books, so I just have kind of an awareness of the comics and where they go. And I know that the animated series is similar to, but not identical to, the comics. So kind of like The Walking Dead was in the early years. So I don't know what exactly to expect, but I was not disappointed. Oh, and I also watched the final episode of The Completely Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin, which continued to delight me, even as I recognize that it's really just kind of, it's a good show, not a great show, but it caters to my sensibilities, so I enjoy it more than I probably should.
Gotcha. I mean, you enjoy it exactly as much as you, Jonathan Strickland, should enjoy it. For Invincible, you said it was heavy. Heavier than the season finale of season 1?
I'm going to say yes. Ooh, because okay. I remember the opener of Invincible is incredibly shocking when that first episode finishes, right? Like the end, the post little, not even post credit, but the post episode sequence is one of the most disturbing things and really sets the tone for the rest of season 1. Mm-hmm. there's nothing quite on that level of, I mean, there's a little bit of, there's definitely visceral violence. I mean, that's part of the show, but it's who it happens to.
Gotcha.
That gets real upsetting. But on the flip side, there's also this feeling that no one's ever gone forever because so many characters return after it appears that they have been killed. Mm-hmm. And then they come, and sometimes they come back even stronger than they were pre getting obliterated. So maybe your personal stakes will vary. It affected me. I didn't get emotional watching it, but I could feel it creeping up to there. And, but in fairness, I am a sap.
I mean, me too. So, I appreciate the warning. I don't know how many of our listeners are, I'm sure some of them appreciate the warning as well. I'm caught up on X-Men 97, the continuation of the old X-Men cartoon. Mm-hmm. This latest episode was just a whole lot of fun because they're releasing them weekly. So there's four episodes right now, just a lot of fun. And then we started watching Reboot, which is old. You know, it's not a new show. It's the one about rebooting a classic television show. And it's very self-referential. If you haven't watched it, it's on Hulu. It makes fun of the industry. It makes fun of remaking things, and it's written by Paul Reiser and Rachel Bloom. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. But I won't talk about it forever because, like I said, it's an older show. And then I started playing Beat Saber. It's been in my house since Christmas, and I finally started playing it. So if you hear what sounds like bubble wrap popping, that's just my joints and spine.
Now, for clarification's sake, Ariel, when you say reboot, you mean the 2022 series, not the animated series from
the
90s.
Yes, I mean the 2022 series.
Because, like, when you said I watch Reboot, I'm like, so I get that you're watching X-Men 97. Did you just decide to go all 90s?
No. Well, I mean, X-Men 97 came out this year, right?
Yeah. But I mean, they're picking up on the 1990s series of the X-Men animated series is what I meant. I'm really excited for them to go to X-Men 98, personally. I can't wait to see what happens.
Very clever. I also can't tell if you're serious or not. Was 98 a good year for you?
Actually 97 was the good year for me. Cause that's the year where I got hitched. That's cool though. I'm glad that you're getting enjoyment out of that series. Like I didn't watch Reboot the 2022 series either. And so if you
it has
really
nothing
enjoy-
to do with the 90s series at all,
that's fine. Which is good because I am only aware of the 90s series. I never actually watched it. I know that people have compared like really cheesy CGI stuff to Reboot era animated series. So that's kind of like my context for that show. But I definitely want to check out Reboot. Maybe I will once I finally do have access to Hulu. Disney Plus has been a real chore for me to access this week. Although part of that is probably just due to the browser I have and how many tabs I have open. But like earlier this week, I was trying to access it and it was giving me a lot of grief. Like I had to reset my password or it wanted me to reset my password. But the thing is that Disney wants to use a single sign-on for all Disney services. Mm-hmm. So whether it's for making a reservation at the parks or watching something on Disney Plus or going to the Disney shop and shopping online, you're supposed to use the same login, right? And for some reason, Disney Plus was not recognizing my login, even though if I went to the Disney Cruise page and used the login, I logged in just fine. So that told me that the email and password were correct, but for some reason it wasn't working. And like, I just tried multiple times and finally gave up. So the whole point being that I can't wait for Hulu to be part of Disney Plus so I can finally watch all these Hulu series I've been hearing about.
I will say, I can see Hulu series on Disney Plus. It's like on Hulu, and it just lists a whole bunch of them, including Reboot.
Right, for me, right. For me, I have to wait until November.
Yeah,
when I can get that level of subscription and have it actually work.
I will say, I think there is something in the proverbial streaming waters because some of my friends and I, we do a group watch. We started it during the pandemic when we all decided we needed to just be able to talk to each other. So we would get on Discord and do a group watch of like Farscape on Amazon. We've kept it up, not always, but for the most part, we've kept it up. And we're currently watching season 2 of Vox Machina. I've seen it before, but I'm happy to rewatch it. And when Amazon turned to the you need to pay more to not get ads service, it changed so that only people who had the service where you didn't get ads could start a watch party, but anyone could join. And now nobody can join a watch party or start a watch party. It happened like 2 days ago, so I don't know if they discontinued the service and didn't tell anybody because all of the information on the internet's very like conflicting. And even within Amazon support, it's conflicting within the same item. And or if they had a bug and they just haven't figured it out yet. But then we went to watch Teleparty and that was acting funky too. So,
well, and a few services had interruptions this week. So Apple had interruptions on Wednesday for all of their streaming stuff, like whether it was music or television. And then Meta had disruptions with WhatsApp, which obviously isn't a streaming service, but it's just one of those things where I'm wondering if there were, I mean, it's entirely possible that all of this is coincidental and it's all due to individual issues that had no crossover from service to service. It's also possible that maybe there was something bigger happening that was kind of causing disruptions. I don't know the answer to that. It's probably more just coincidence than anything else, but it really hammers home that the world of streaming has both pros and cons. The pros being that when everything's working, you can watch whatever you want, assuming it's available whenever you want. Obviously, lots of cons, like maybe what you want isn't on the service you're already subscribed to and you would have to subscribe to something else, or maybe it was available but the agreement lapsed and now it's not on there anymore, or lots of other issues, like to the point where, again, people like me have gone back to starting to collect physical media again, just so that we don't run into that case where it's like, I really have a hunkering to watch Buckaroo Banzai and torture our friend of the show, Shay Lee, by making her watch it again, but it's not available on streaming anywhere, so I had to buy it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I never stopped collecting physical media, though I have gotten rid of some stuff, and I am being more picky about the new stuff that I watch, or that I buy. But stuff that I'm like, the Watchmen series from HBO or Doom Patrol or things that I'm worried might eventually completely disappear.
That's valid, especially considering who owns HBO.
Yeah, yeah. But with that, let's talk about all the things that HBO and all these streaming services and everybody else are bringing to the media with our 30 seconds or less.
Yeah, and this time we got a ton of stories in this. And so I told Ariel before we started recording, the first time, let alone the fourth time, that I was going to try very hard to not add anything to the end of her segments because we've got approximately 73 entries into 30 seconds or less.
You count really good. guess how high or how low above it. And I don't know, you get the reward of guessing correctly. We don't have a budget. The first story is that we have a runtime for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and talk about scope creep, because the first, it's long, you guys. The first Planet of the Apes new movie was 105 minutes, the second was 130, the next was 140, and the new one is 145 minutes. It is 2 hours and 25 minutes long, almost 2.5 hours long. I sure hope people enjoy it to make it worth sitting in a chair having to pee because you got too big of a soda for that long.
Noted. This past week, Disney held its shareholders meeting, and there was a battle among some investors who want major changes at the board level. Now, ultimately, Disney CEO Bob Iger won the day, with shareholders backing his leadership and his board member picks, for now at least. But two big takeaways were that shareholders want real succession planning for Iger's eventual replacement, because the last time it didn't work out so great, and they also want that streaming service stuff to start making money, please.
I mean, all that makes sense. We got a poster for Joker Folie à Deux. I'm sorry to everybody who speaks French who listens to this. I know I did not say it well. We're getting a trailer next week, but this week we got the poster. It shows Joaquin Phoenix dipping Lady Gaga as their characters in the Joker. We also got news that there will be at least 15 reinterpretations of popular songs, and maybe some original music, which turns this movie into Jonathan's favorite genre, a joke box musical.
A joke box musical. All right. The Fantastic Four film cast gets another name added to it, Julia Garner, who was in Ozark and is part of the upcoming but delayed, stay tuned, movie The Wolfman. Garner will be playing Shalabal, and also the Silver Surfer. Now, in the comics, Shalabal is an empress, and she is the Silver Surfer's main squeeze, if you catch my drift. Both characters have been heralds of Galactus in the past in the comic books, so we'll have to see how this plays out in the movie.
I'm looking forward to it. Atari has bought Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 from Frontier Developments. They bought it for $7 million, which means that they now own... they're now the sole publisher of all major titles within Roller Coaster Tycoon, which I guess that makes them a roller coaster game tycoon. Yeah, that's it.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm just going to kill a little time so that the music can play through. All right. Hey, remember when I mentioned just a moment ago that Wolfman is being delayed? Well, yeah, it's being delayed. So the film, which is a joint venture between Universal and Blumhouse, has been pushed from late this year, which is 2024 for those of y'all keeping count, to January 17th, 2025. And in the film, Christopher Abbott plays a father and husband whose family is terrorized by a dangerous predator. Spoiler alert, it's a werewolf. Maybe played by Julia Garner. I don't know.
We'll have to see. Do you remember Matrix 4, the self-referential ho-hum Matrix movie that came after the first three that got decreasingly good in quality? That is my own personal opinion. If you love them, that's awesome. I do enjoy them, even though I think the first was the strongest. Well, we're getting a fifth one, but this time it's being written and directed by Drew Goddard. And that makes me excited because he's done a lot of things I enjoy, including Cloverfield, Cabin in the Woods, The Martian, and the Netflix Daredevil TV show. So here's hoping he can bring something cool and new to the Matrix.
Okay, so first of all, I think Matrix 4 is better than both Matrix 2 and definitely Matrix 3. And I actually really like the fourth Matrix film because
I enjoyed it.
It to me, it felt kind of like Gremlins 2, where it's a sequel that is just like, yeah, we made the first one. We're really gonna skewer it now. And that's kind of how Matrix 4 came out. I was like, as a Matrix film, I could see how it would be disappointing, but as a commentary on the film and the culture that rose up around it, I found it really interesting. But yeah, I hated Matrix 2, and I can't even say anything about Matrix 3.
I didn't mind Matrix 2. But let's see if you'll enjoy this next number two.
Oh my God. Yeah. So originally Ariel wrote this one down, but I decided to take it. So we knew already that HBO was having a second season of Velma. That actually got greenlit before the first season had even finished publication. But now we know when it's coming out. And this is despite the fact that that first season is objectively bad. Like, that's not my opinion. It is objectively a bad show. Okay, no, that is just my opinion. Anyway, now we know season two is coming out starting April 25th. So get ready to hate watch, because that's what I'm going to do. I know I'm going to do it, which is, I hate myself, I guess. Anyway, that's this news item.
I I've watched one episode and I will not watch more. So if you want to get into comics and you're like, oh my gosh, there's too many comics, don't worry. In 2015, they fixed that with Ultimate Marvel, for Marvel comics, not for DC. But then there's a whole bunch of Ultimate Marvel comics now. So they're rebooting it, this year. They're doing a new reader-friendly reboot, of Marvel, Earth 6160. It's going to include Spider-Man and Black Panther and X-Men. And the nice thing is, if you want to get into the X-Men comics, the first issue just released. The second issue is releasing later this month. And then the third one in October, and then the third one will be releasing, I think, in November. Anyhow, yeah, if you want to get into comics, now's a good time. If you like Marvel.
Yeah, occasionally comic book series have to do these massive reboots because everything just gets so convoluted and complicated that it's impossible to manage. See also the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Okay, hey, remember when I said that Disney shareholders want the company to figure out how to make streaming profitable? Well, part of that involves cracking down on password sharing. So starting in June, if Disney suspects that you're using a shared password to access the service, they're going to send Mickey Mouse over with a crowbar to kneecap you. Sorry, I read that wrong. No, they'll send you a little pop-up that says, hey, you should sign up to subscribe to this yourself. But they're also going to introduce a paid sharing subscription tier similar to what Netflix is doing. So it worked for Netflix. We'll see if it works for Disney Plus.
Very interesting. Apparently, Maggie Gyllenhaal is directing a classic monster movie called The Bride. They're saying it's long awaited. This, honestly, I probably read about it and then forgot about it, which is surprising since I like classic movie monster stuff. Anyhow, Jesse Buckley is the bride and Christian Bale is Frankenstein, and I'm talking about it because they've released some pictures of it. It looks very like 80s punk-esque, so we will share those in our show notes.
Interesting, right? Like... So this just makes me think of a film that came out in 1985, which was also a Bride of Frankenstein film, but that one starred Sting and Jennifer Beals. So when I saw this news item, I was like, they're remaking The Bride, which is fine. The Bride's a great movie, it's a disturbing movie, just like y'all know, but it is a great movie. I don't know if this will have anything connected to that, apart from the fact that it's drawing from the same general source material. Okay, sorry. I know. 30 seconds or less. I failed. All right. We all know that there's a Fallout streaming series coming out soon. Well, Amazon Prime subscribers will also get to enjoy, I guess is the right word, the online game Fallout 76 for free as part of the promotion for the series. Fallout 76 is set in and around West Virginia and was heavily criticized when it first came out, though as I understand it, it's a much better experience now. I haven't revisited it since it first came out. I need to. If you've got Amazon Prime, you can try it out for yourself soon for free. It's also on Game Pass, so if you're a Game Pass subscriber, then you can already do that.
I think last week or the week before, we talked about how Death is going to have a bigger part in Sandman Season 2 on Netflix, the character of Death. And now we've gotten episode titles for Sandman Season 2. And I am just going to go through what I think Season 2 is going to hold for us. This is just complete conjecture. But I believe that this is also going to be a jukebox musical, kind of a spoof on other genre sort of things, very schmigadoonish. So we've got the Song of Orpheus, which is obviously just going to be a Hadestown musical episode. We've got More Devils Than Vast Hell Can Hold, which is going to be an animated episode that's a la Has-Been Hotel. Brief Lives is going to be a Quantum Leap spoof. Family Blood will be Family Ties. And then Ruler of Hell will be Beetlejuice. And Seasons of Mist is the only one I'm torn on. I don't know if it's going to be a video game first person like the Mist game, or if it's just going to be them singing Seasons of Love over and over and over again until you go insane.
I am thankful that I am 99% sure that that is not what Season 2 of The Sandman is going to be. We will be talking about Death again once we get to our actual news items. Yeah. Okay, well, while we're getting a second and third season of Netflix's adaptation of Avatar The Last Airbender, there's actually going to be a different creative team in charge of seasons 2 and 3, because showrunner Albert Kim, who developed the series for Netflix, is actually stepping away, and Christine Boylan and Jabbar Raisani will be taking the helm. And both Boylan and Raisani have served in a producer role for the first season. Albert Kim, meanwhile, is reportedly shifting over to work on the Percy Jackson series for Disney.
I really enjoy the Percy Jackson series. Avatar's not bad. Lastly, for me, and lastly in our 30 seconds or less, is Nana Visitor, who played Major Kira Nerys on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, is writing a book. It's called Star Trek, An Open Channel, Open a Channel, A Woman's Trek. It's all about the women behind the scenes and in front of the screen or in front of the camera in Star Trek, how they broke boundaries and ceilings for women in general, and then also some of the hardships that they went through being women in the industry of that era, and how Star Trek, even when it tries to be advanced, sometimes is victim to its own era of things. I read another article about how Star Trek only has old fans. So the book sounds really interesting.
Yeah. If you watch Star Trek, The Next Generation, and you look at the uniforms for women, especially early on in that series, it becomes very clear that while they might profess sort of an egalitarian approach and a approach where women are equals to men, that's not how it comes out in the uniforms, y'all. That was, you didn't see the dudes walking around in mini skirts in that first season.
Next Generation or?
Yeah, Next Generation.
TNG, they wore pants.
Not originally. If you watch some of those early episodes, there are ones where they have the little mini skirt type thing going on, like Deanna Troi as an example.
I always assumed that was, but Beverly Crusher wore pants.
Sure,
I always assumed that was just a fashion choice.
She was a doctor lady though. So doctor ladies are different from lady
and
ladies.
On Deanna Troi's planet, the women don't wear clothes because they're much happier with their betazoid and biology.
This isn't the Orville. We didn't have episodes exploring casual nudity unless Luoxana Troi was on there.
Yes, but she was on the show, so
occasionally as a guest. It was like a joke. It wasn't like a regular member of the crew. Just summing it up as saying Star Trek had high aspirations that it did not always live up to, but at least it had the aspirations to begin with.
Yeah. And it's still trying, and I enjoy season 3 of, or the final season, it might be 4. The final season of Discovery just dropped, so I'll be watching that and Picard, and then I'll be caught up on all of my Star Trek except for Lower Decks.
I feel like I'm all caught up, and I haven't watched anything since like the second Star Trek Next Generation film.
I really enjoy Strange New Worlds a lot. The second season more than the first, but the first season I also enjoyed. Yeah.
Well, are we ready to segue into our actual stories?
I think this hour-long conversation about women's clothing choices in Star Trek has already segued us there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first item in our list doesn't relate to that, so I think we're okay. Yeah, we watched another trailer for Boy Kills World. This is the revenge movie that features a character who is deaf and mute, has actually gone deaf and mute. He wasn't born that way, and has H. John Benjamin's voice as his inner voice in his head. And it looks like a gonzo revenge film that has elements of like The Running Man in it. And what did you think of the trailer?
I was worried because it's a Red Band trailer and it was super, super, they make things that are not safe for work. And it actually looks fun. It looked like, even though it was going to be gory, that it looked like it was going to be fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more bloody than outright gory. Like
here's something.
A lot of blood spatters, but not like not like entrails, although maybe, yeah. I don't know, but it definitely, I think I said the last time we talked about Boy Kills World that it looks like it's more in line with the spirit of Borderlands than the Borderlands trailer was. And yes. I still feel that way.
I agree. And I am looking forward to it because I think Bill Skarsgård he's the main character, is a good actor. And now he won't be playing a creepy clown, I don't think.
Yeah. Maybe he'll still do that weird thing with his eyes that he can do, but,
Or drool out of the center of his lip. Like, I get it. I can blow air out of one of my eyeballs. It's cool to have weird human tricks, but
yeah. Yeah. I can do taxes in my sleep. Like, that's mine. But,
if I had known.
Yeah. Sorry. I haven't been sleeping so well this past couple of months. So I don't know how good a job I would do. I didn't say I'd do them great. Like there's been a lot of audits. So, but no, like I like this trailer. I definitely anticipate like this feels like one of those movies where it's outside the normal realm that you see in Hollywood. And it's in a way that tickles me. It actually, again, I'm talking about the spirit, not the style of filmmaking, but it reminds me of, do you remember that action movie? I can't remember the name of it now, that was shot like totally from first person perspective. Like it was like Hardcore Harry or something like that.
I think that was it. Yeah. Was it the Guns for Hands one with Daniel Radcliffe?
No. I'm thinking about what it was. The whole concept was that it was a full action movie and you're seeing it from the first person perspective of the guy running through everything. That also, it kind of has that same sort of anarchic spirit to it. It's, again, stylistically totally different movie, but I feel like the same kind of creative energy went into it and I'm all for it.
Me too. Also, this is a director. He's a German director, Moritz Mohr, who at least according to his IMDb has not done a lot of stuff that's made, you know, US television film. So he's got a fairly short IMDb list. So I'm excited to see something that is new and fresh.
Yes. And just to follow up, it was Hardcore Henry, not Hardcore Harry. So I was close. Considering how terrible my memory is, I'm going to give myself a point on that one.
Yeah, and I looked it up and I still went, yeah, that's Harry. So I'm going to detract one from me.
Next up, we got another follow-up on an upcoming film that, you know, we talked about in a previous episode when the trailer first broke, which is The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare that Henry Cavill and Alan Richardson and others are in. And we got another teaser. There's also some first glimpses that are out there. I saw two different ones of two very short excerpts from scenes that kind of give a feel for this. This also has like an anarchic spirit to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a hugely new concept, and only partly because it's based loosely on real life activities. But it does look fun.
For those who don't remember what this is, can you give like a little like high overview of what the...
Sure. Yeah. So Winston Churchill had a group of like secret fighter people who they were like special forces in World War II to fight Nazis. So vaguely Inglorious Bastards-y.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
It looks like it's going to be violent and tongue in cheek, which is just a genre we get a lot of lately. But it looks fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the sequences I saw. There was one where they are encountering a German warship on the ocean and the warship is firing a gun at the boat that they're in and slowly kind of dialing in the distance of where they are in compare, because they're in a little boat compared to the big warship. And meanwhile, it turns out that one of the operatives had infiltrated the boat and planted explosives right next to their gunpowder room, essentially. And so they're just sitting there waiting and seeing if the explosives go off before the Germans are able to find the correct range to fire on their boat. So that was one. And then the other one involved Alan Richardson shooting arrows through Nazis, not at, not into, but through them, because the dude is like a freaking mountain of a man. And apparently the bow he was using was like a 250 pound bow or something.
I mean, that's cool. that's cool. It's also a movie. If you want to see pretty people being tongue in cheek, the cast is very pretty.
That's true.
It gives me vaguely like Suicide Squad vibes.
Which makes sense because
the Suicide Squad
vibes. Yes, the Suicide Squad. And it makes sense because like from everything I've heard, that was essentially a real world version of the Suicide Squad. Like these folks were being sent on a mission that was almost certain to fail, and reportedly like they lost support from the UK halfway through it and still kept going. So it definitely has Suicide Squad vibes in more ways than one.
Yep. And when those people died, they came back as ghosts to solve more crimes and mysteries.
You might be mixing that up with our next one.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah, that
set me straight, Jonathan.
So we got the trailer for Dead Boy Detective Agency. These are characters that were created by Neil Gaiman for the Sandman series originally. In fact, the characters show up in the first season of Sandman, though they're played by different actors. There is an episode of the Sandman in the first season where the Dead Boy detectives are featured, which I only know because I read the article about it. Because I didn't watch the first season of Sandman.
I don't remember them showing up. I do remember them showing up in Doom Patrol, where they were also different actors.
Doom Patrol is what I meant, and not Sandman. Thank you, Ariel, because that is the show that I should have said. Yes, Doom Patrol is where they showed up. Yeah, played by different actors. But now they're getting their own series, different actors, obviously. And we got the trailer for it. The trailer looks interesting, although I really wish they had picked a different song besides Black Parade to be the background.
Yeah, it looks both fun and scary and serious. I like shows that kind of jump around the genres. It really feels like it's gonna scratch an itch for people who are sad that like Lockwood & Co. got canceled or that Supernatural ended. Those similar kind of vibes. As far as I know, because I've had some people a little confused about this, I don't think that Lockwood & Co. is in the same world as Dead Boy Detectives, though it does have a very similar vibe. So, yeah.
And the character of Death shows up in the trailer for Dead Boy Detective Agency. Like, they actually mention that they're kind of like literally on the run from death. So like that's great that they have that very brief appearance of the character of Death in the trailer. I also wanted to mention that when I was looking up information about this, I saw that the person who wrote the pilot episode is Steve Yockey, and that just delights me. Because that's someone I know. That's someone that I've known for more than 20 years. Because back when I first started going to Dad's Garage Theater, which I've talked about a few times on this show, Steve Yockey was the marketing director for the theater. He actually lived next door to the theater when it was on its original location here in Atlanta off Elizabeth Street. And he shared an apartment with another person named Laura Gunderson. And if you're into plays, you might know Laura Gunderson as the most produced playwright in America. So these two people shared an apartment together, Laura Gunderson and Steve Yockey. And then they both went on to do these phenomenal things, which means I want to play about the time where they were roommates in Atlanta, living next to an improv theater in a busted old building, because that to me is a rich mine for material.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be fun. I would watch that. So much good talent comes out of Atlanta.
Yeah, it really does. Like if you watch films and TV, you're bound to see actors, some of whom we personally know or have worked with in the past, and they're doing great stuff. Like,
heck, the new show Manhunt about John Wilkes Booth that has come out. There's a bunch of local Atlanta actors that I know.
Yeah, it's cool when you see someone, you're like, oh my gosh, I saw them in a show like 10 years ago, or I acted in a show with them. Like, that's really cool. Yeah.
I suspect we're going to have a lot more of that because the Georgia is keeping its current incentives to keep the industry here.
We might. I mean, it's tough, right? Because, I mean, you know this as an actor. Like, a lot of actors from Atlanta who end up working a lot in Atlanta actually have to move out of Atlanta to get considered for parts frequently. Not as much now as it was maybe 5 years ago, but because there's a lot more video auditions that happen now. But back then, like, I know so many people who moved out of Atlanta to Los Angeles, and then they started getting work, and all their work happened to be back in Atlanta, but they needed to maintain a space in LA in order to really be considered for parts. So it's kind of a weird paradox.
Yeah. Yeah. There's weird location stuff in SAG-AFTRA. Not weird. It's not even bad. It makes it tricky if you want to audition bi-coastal, but yeah, video auditions are more of a thing. That was actually one of the things that was in the contract. Cause some people want to get back in the room. That was a very not full sentence, but anyhow, I could talk about it forever. There are more lead roles for actors coming out of Atlanta now, being given, to Atlanta actors as a choice, as for a while there, Atlanta had such a small part of the industry and there were so few film actors that they could kind of just dial it in, which, you know, is a hard reputation to come back for, but there are a lot of actors who are really putting in the time and the work to be professional and be good, and they are succeeding. So I suspect the trend will continue to favor. There are a bunch of like big actors who have moved to Atlanta as their full-time base now.
Speaking of a big time actor who worked in Atlanta for some time because he was on The Walking Dead and that's where it shot. We have a little interesting update about someone who appears to be involved in the new season of Daredevil that will be coming up.
Yeah, this probably could have gone in 30 seconds or less, but John Barenthal, who played The Punisher on Netflix, is confirmed to be in the new Daredevil series for Disney Plus. You're welcome for that beautiful journey I just took you on.
Yeah, which I could have edited out, but she just kept going, so we're going to keep it now.
Yep. He's going to be in it. And there are some pictures of that. Probably could have been a 30 seconds or less.
Probably. But like, I'm excited. I never watched the Punisher series when it was on Netflix, but I saw the Punisher show up in Daredevil, and I really liked the interpretation of the Punisher in the Daredevil series. I thought that it was really effective, and Barenthal does a great job as, you know, obviously a vengeful man who's a man of few words, but lots of punching and shooting.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed the first season of the Punisher about 75%. There are a couple of the characters that I didn't enjoy their journey as much. And the second season kind of lost me, but I do enjoy his dynamic with Daredevil, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, speaking of another entry that probably could have just gone into 30 seconds or less, but I was like, I watched this. Now Ariel has to watch it too.
I had already watched it.
Okay. Well, then we both saw it. It was the teaser trailer for the Descendants 4. Now, I have never watched any of the Descendants. I only know that it follows characters who are supposed to be the descendant of like an iconic Disney villain, right? So like you've got the children or whatever of famous Disney villains, which raises a lot of troubling questions as to how some of these Disney villains found a partner, but I'm not going to think about that too hard. So the Descendants 4 introduces Red, whom I'm guessing, since she draws hearts all over things in a nondescript hallway must be the descendant of the Queen of Hearts from Alice in Wonderland?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
I think this one also filmed in the South. But that's neither here nor there. I haven't watched, I've watched a little bit of Descendants. I have some young individuals who visit my house once a year for Thanksgiving and they enjoy watching it. So I've watched it with them. And then I've watched a little bit on my own out of curiosity because I like fairy tales. It is made for a younger audience than I, though I do appreciate some of it. What I really appreciate about this season, at least, is that Brandy, who played Cinderella in the 1997 version of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella that Disney did, is back as Cinderella.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and her husband is the same husband. Oh, now I'm trying to remember his name.
But same actor?
Yeah, the same actor. It's, oh shoot, what is his name? Paolo Montalban. Montalban.
No, cool.
Who is like a well-known actor. I just can't pronounce his name when I read it. But yeah, they were in the 1997 musical that had Whitney Houston as the fairy godmother and Whoopi Goldberg as the queen, Prince Charming's mother. So yeah, they're in it. I talked to a good mutual friend of ours, Jen, who's also an awesome writer at Fanbolt, who was like, I think that's a retcon. She and I watched so many Disney things that were made for younger people than us.
The shock that I'm experiencing right now is overwhelming.
but no, I like, if it is a retcon, I like that retcon, because I enjoyed that version of the musical and I'm glad that they're tying it into the greater world.
Yeah. I part of me is curious about the Descendants, 'cause I've always thought the aesthetic was kind of interesting. I mean, it's a very, mm-hmm. it's a very kind of sanitized punk glam look for a lot of the characters, which I kind of dig. I mean, they even use the song Bad Reputation in this teaser, which is, you know, a Joan Jett and the Blackheart song, which is great. But the aesthetic has appealed to me, but the age of the actors always kind of keyed off to me like, oh, this is sort of a preteens kind of series of films, and I probably wouldn't get much out of it. So I've never actually watched them, but it is also one of those things where I will see cosplays where I'm like, oh, that's a really cool interpretation of a character. Then find out that, oh no, this was a screen accurate cosplay of a character from the Descendants. You just didn't know because you're old and out of touch.
Yeah. I see less cosplays from the new Interview with a Vampire show.
Well, that's only because it's just been out for a season, but we did get a trailer for season 2.
We did. What did you think?
Well, I haven't watched the first season, so that's part of my issue, is that, and I never read the book. I did see the Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt film when that came out, ancient history times, because mm-hmm. I saw that when it came out and I saw it in the theater.
Wow.
Yeah. Like that, back when I went to things like theaters, I saw it there. And that's my only experience with Interview with the Vampire. The bits that I saw, I'm like, well, this feels, you know, like it's fittingly gothic and very romantic's the wrong word. I mean, it's sexy. Like, it feels like it's a very mm-hmm. sexy kind of show. Which also gets real creepy because one of the characters is a vampire who was turned as a young girl, as the Kirsten Dunst played her, I think, in the original. Yeah. She won an Oscar for that. As I recall. Anyway, that's always, I mean, it's meant to be a creepy element of the story. Like, that was the intention from the get-go. So to say that they're succeeding is, I guess, a good thing. I personally found that particular storyline to be really unsettling, and again, that was that's how it was meant to be, but it doesn't mean that I enjoyed it. You're right, like, I appreciated the effect that the art had on me. I did not enjoy the experience.
I agree. As far as sexy go, isn't, like, Anne Rice writes romance novels, right?
Romance is putting it. Romance is putting a very nice word for what she wrote. Yes.
So that doesn't surprise me. I also watched the original one, though not when it came out in the theaters, with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt and Kirsten Dunst in it.
And Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, I remember very little about it, honestly. Just enough. The show looks like it's very well done. It looks like the acting is great. It does vaguely give me, like... It evokes the feeling of the flashbacks in Buffy and Angel.
But at a higher production value.
But at a higher production value, yeah. I meant to watch season one. I'm going to be real honest here. I kind of shied away from it because of how sexy it looked. But it looks like the story is told very well. So
yeah, I to the point where when I saw this teaser or this trailer, I was wondering if they had not introduced Lestat in the first season, because there's a sequence in the trailer where they're like, that's Lestat. Like it felt like that was supposed to be the introduction of that character into the series. And I'm thinking, wow, did they go a full season without bringing Lestat into the show? Cause that's bold. Cause that's probably the character that most people are familiar with. When you talk about Interview with the Vampire, that's Tom Cruise's character in the film. And also like subsequent books in the series focus primarily on Lestat, or at least there is one that's about Lestat called The Vampire Lestat, in fact. So I thought, wow, if that in fact is the first introduction of that character into the series, it's a very bold choice to go a full season without doing that.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that question, having not watched the first season.
Yeah. Maybe one of our listeners can give us a heads up, because I mean, if Lestat was in it in the first season, and this is just sort of another moment of Lestat's revelation to a larger audience or something, that's fine. But, but the implication I got was that, oh no, this is where we're bringing this character in. And I'm like, wow, to go a full season without arguably the more famous of the two characters who are kind of the primary focus of that story. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Less incredible for me, at least.
Yeah.
Is the National Wildlife Service's new like horror campaign that they're doing, which includes Bambi the Reckoning, which we just got a teaser for.
Yeah. This is actually not part of Smokey the Bear's posse. This is part of the, and this is not my term, this is their term, this is part of the Pooniverse from the, you know, Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey movie. Like we talked earlier about how there were going to be spinoffs as well as a big like ensemble film, kind of the Avengers style, except it was going to have all these characters who are IP that are now in the public domain. So Bambi the Reckoning is part of the Pooniverse, and we got a teaser trailer, and yeah, it's Bambi's back and out for revenge. He's ticked off at what hunters did to his mom. And yeah, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to watch the original Bambi and prepare yourself for trauma that will sit with you for the rest of your life.
Yes.
What was your reaction? Like, I almost didn't put this in. Because one, I think it looks terrible. Two, I don't think that it's clever or funny. And three, obviously it's going to at least imply animal endangerment. And I know that's a huge trigger for you, Ariel. So I almost didn't put it in here. But at the same time, I was like, it's so dumb. I don't know if it's going to affect you or not.
It didn't, because I didn't think about it too hard. Hence the joke about it being the National Wildlife Service, which they do great work, not dissing them at all. I almost put like, it's PETA's new campaign on, hey, be nice to animals or they'll get their revenge.
Yeah. Because
Winnie the Pooh's a bear and Tigger is a tiger and Piglet's a pig. And Bambi's a deer. I thought the production value looked good.
But yeah, it definitely looks like it's a step above the first Winnie Blood and Honey film.
Yeah. But it's not for me.
Yeah.
It's not for me. And I like like is the wrong word. I appreciated a lot of fairy tales for the darker versions of them. Just from like a bizarre standpoint. And I enjoyed Dropout's Never After, which was a kind of like a fairy tale horror role-playing game that ended up being very funny, but also had some scary elements. But this just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, I can't shake the feeling that these films are based on premises that would work as like a short, but are far too thin to support a feature length film, right? Like you watch it and you're like, this is all based on essentially a joke. Like, what if, but now horror? That's essentially what the joke is. And you can't really, I don't know that you could support a full film that way just based on that premise. And I am not convinced that there's anything more to it than that premise. Honestly, when I watch this teaser, I'm like, oh, this also feels like it could have been set in the Cocaine Bear universe, and it would have been just as much of a fit there as it would be in the so-called Pooniverse. I hate that so much. I can't tell you how much I hate that.
I don't like it. I get that they're being clever. It's just not my kind of humor. You know, the next horror film, Cuckoo, also that you put in here, also looks pretty clever. It's about a bird that goes to a summer camp for kids.
That's not what that's about. That's the next one.
Oh, shoot.
Cuckoo is not about, though. You're thinking Woody Woodpecker goes to camp. Hold on to your pants, y'all. We'll be talking about that in a second. Now, Cuckoo. So I put this in here because when I watched the trailer, I thought, as the trailer ended, I thought, this is kind of my favorite type of horror movie trailer in that it gives me a feel for the tone and the vibe of the movie, but I couldn't tell you what the movie's actually about, right? Like, it doesn't spell the plot out from beginning to end in that there's a lot left to discover. If I had to kind of describe it, I would say that, a family is traveling and goes to a town that they are not familiar with. And then there's strange stuff happening there that is of a dangerous level, whether or not that's supernatural, or maybe there's a cult situation going on or something else. Like, I don't know. I don't, is this a cult movie? Is it a zombie movie? Is it a ghost movie? I don't know the answer to that. And that, I think, is really interesting. Also, the title Cuckoo to me suggests the birds that, you know, isn't it the cuckoo? Isn't that one of those birds that lays its eggs in nests of other birds?
I don't know about its egg laying habits. Yeah,
well, I'm just thinking like, if that's the case, like that might be part of the theme of the film. Although now that I say it out loud, I'm like, you're probably thinking of Mockingbird and you're just getting your birds mixed up, Jonathan. So,
I mean, I don't know. Listeners who know about birds,
ophthalmologists, if you have really good eyesight and you've seen a lot of birds.
So I'm going to tell you, cause this movie came out as like it's been shown at some festivals, right?
Yeah.
And now it's getting a wider release. So I was able to find the plot. I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but it is also as bizarre as the trailer. So it holds up there. I did read one review where they said they wished that that it had leaned more into being a B movie, which I thought was interesting. But I think this fits in our lineup just because it's got a huge slew of like geeky actors in it. Dan Stevens, who was in Legion and Downton Abbey, and was Beast in the live action Beauty and the Beast. Jessica Henwick, who was in Iron Fist. Gemma Chan, who was in Captain Marvel, as well as the Immortals, the Eternals. she's a brilliant actor. Don't hold that movie against her. And then Sophia Boutella, who was in the Kingsman stuff and John Malkovich. And it's got a crazy cast. Mm.
Well, and like I said, like the trailer really appealed to me because I still wasn't sure what was going on by the end of it, but I dug what I saw. So this is one that's on my list of movies to see. So I'm excited about Cuckoo.
I look forward to hearing your review about it.
I look forward to hearing your review of Woody Woodpecker Goes to Camp, because there ain't no reality in the multiverse where I've gone to see that movie.
Do I have to?
More young people than I do.
I do. They might be aging out of this.
Well, that's actually one of the things I want. Okay, trailer, Woody Woodpecker Goes to Camp. It's a mix of live action and animation. Woody Woodpecker is animated. Part of what I wanted to ask you is that, is Woody Woodpecker still a relevant character? Have there been any Woody Woodpecker cartoons in like the last 30 years that I just don't know about?
There were. Okay. There was a 2017 movie.
Tybalt has a lot to say about this too.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. There was a 2017 movie, you know, and I watched things like Yogi Bear and Woody Woodpecker and Wacky Races and all McGilla Gorilla and Jabberjaw, all those really old Hanna-Barbera type cartoons. And I enjoyed them when I was young, even though like they came out a lot of times before my time, I was watching reruns, but I never felt like Woody the Woodpecker was the kind of character that needed to be around today. Because he's just kind of an annoying troublemaker. It's a very Dennis the Menace kind of, to use another old term that our younger listeners may not know. Just a character that goes out and wreaks havoc and has an annoying catchphrase. It's kind of a thing of the past.
Lean into that laugh so hard in this trailer that by the end of it, I just wanted to stab my eyes out.
Yeah.
It was just the thing. Like, and it's just, it plays. Oh, it's like a nightmare. Like, it could have turned into a horror movie trailer by the end of it, and I would not have been surprised.
Yeah. The weird thing for me about this, it's got some bigger actors in it. But it's a weird mix of CGI and humans. It doesn't.
Yeah, there's characters besides Woody Woodpecker who are animated. Like there was like a walrus character and some others where that threw me off too. Because to see like real life human beings and then the occasional CGI character is, I don't know, it's weirder to me. Like I think I'm good with either going all in where everything is animated, or you have it where just a single character is animated and everyone else is live action. But unless you're Who Framed Roger Rabbit, trying to mess with that mix more than that is really tricky without just making me feel like it's not focused.
Yeah. I mean, like they've done it with like Alvin and the Chipmunks and things like that, but I think it works better if you've got one character or like the main character / characters as the animated portion, and then everybody else is human, including the villain.
Yeah.
Because if it were just a movie with people and Woody Woodpecker, visually I could get behind it more, but to have the villain be animated and then to have this random third walrus person that kind of looks like a human cartoon human be animated, just, it's too incongruous for my brain eyes.
Yeah. I couldn't figure out who this was supposed to appeal to, but that was largely because since I was unaware of the earlier film, like I just, when you think about certain cultural touchstones, I can't imagine Woody Woodpecker being way up there with characters like Mickey Mouse, you know,
or Sonic, or
Mario, or like these are Sonic and Mario are characters that are, have been around for ages too. Right. And like, but they've had a persistence that Woody Woodpecker, I would argue, hasn't really had. Like Woody Woodpecker, even in his day, was not like top tier. You still had like Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, and you had the Disney characters who were
Garfield and the Chipmunks.
Well, even that, like the Smurfs. Like Woody Woodpecker definitely predates Garfield, but you like you think of Looney Tunes, you think of the Disney characters, like those were top tier. Then you had characters like Tom and Jerry, you know, that were a slightly lower level. And then I think right around Tom and Jerry, maybe a little below, is like Woody Woodpecker. That's my own personal kind of ranking system, not even ranking in quality, just in terms of popularity and, you know, awareness. So that's why I was surprised to see this trailer, because I was like, is Woody Woodpecker still a thing, or is this an example of a movie studio trying to cash in on an existing IP that they happen to have the rights to?
I wonder if it's that latter bit. I mean, we get some of these smaller characters that are older pop up every now and again, yeah. You know, Rocky and Bullwinkle is an example. Yeah,
that's true.
Like none of them, Yogi Bear, none of them come up super frequently, but they occasionally poke up out of the dirt. I'm still waiting for a Snorks movie.
I'm itching for the gritty reboot of Gummy Bears. Honestly,
look, they're bouncing here and there and everywhere.
High Adventure, that's beyond compare. That's beyond
compare.
We used to sing the theme song to Gummy Bears, yes, behind the scenes at the Georgia Renaissance Festival at the end of the day.
Yes. Alicia Keys did a really great cover of it, of the theme song. Yeah, I enjoy Gummy Bears. I would watch more Gummy Bears.
I also enjoy Gummy Bears, both the show and the actual treat. Well, I don't eat the treat anymore because it's got gelatin in it, but I used to.
DuckTales has gotten a good resurgence. That's true. I think Gummy Bears could too.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? It may turn out that, who knows, maybe this Woody Woodpecker goes to camp movie actually ends up being really entertaining, has a lot of heart, and ends up being, you know, earning a place for some people's like favorite films, which is totally cool if it does.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where when it popped up, I started asking the question, why does this exist? And my mind just goes to like really cynical answers.
Yeah, I agree. And I think just, again, part of it is that it's not, the character as originally written is not a very deep character. It's more of a gimmick.
I mean, he's like,
but the entire character,
he's essentially a mischief maker, which is very similar to other characters. Like, you know, Bugs Bunny is a mischief maker too. Although Bugs Bunny is a mischief maker mixed with a heavy dose of Groucho Marx, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But Woody Woodpecker didn't really seem to have that second layer. It was just like, hey, where's a really orderly situation that I could totally mess up?
Yeah. Whew, you guys, we are almost to the end.
Yeah, we've got four more.
Yeah. Next, something that I actually might be the thing I've been most excited from this IP for a while. We got a trailer for Jurassic World Chaos Theory.
Mm-hmm. This is
it's a teaser.
It's a sequel to Camp Cretaceous, which I didn't even know was a thing. Like, how did I not know about Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous?
I think we talked about it early on when they were first like talking about it. And then, it also fell off of my radar.
So that's an animated series. And it introduces a group of young kids, not young kids, but kids, like teenage kids, who in Camp Cretaceous end up having to survive together for like almost a year while they're within the world of Jurassic World. And the more details about that I can't give you because I didn't watch it. So Chaos Theory is a sequel, and just as much time has passed between Camp Cretaceous and Chaos Theory as passed between the release of Camp Cretaceous and Chaos Theory. So all the characters are now like 5 years older, but it's coming back together with them. And the cartoon looks pretty intense.
It does. And I love that choice of making it real world time. For the viewers. I think what happened was that Camp Cretaceous came out right around the time that the pandemic hit. And so, 5 years ago. So,
wow. No, 4 years ago is when the pandemic hit.
Oh, is it only 4 years ago?
Because it's 2024 and it happened in 2020. In 2019, I think it's COVID-19 because it was discovered in 2019, but we didn't know about it until 2020.
Fair enough. Anyhow, I think it looks good. I love the idea. I love the Camp Cretaceous idea of these kids had to live for a year on the park, because that gives it like more depth and more interesting things than just a Jurassic Park. Oh, we have to run from the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I almost said dragons movie. It makes it feel very Land of the Lost, where you have to figure out how to survive and have a good life. And you even find, you know, allies or whatever.
Yeah. Maybe even young love.
So I have to go back and watch that. And then I also have to watch Chaos Theory.
Yeah.
I shared it with my sister and, she's also interested, so maybe we'll watch it together.
When I saw the trailer, I wasn't aware of Camp Cretaceous. I mean, I'm sure we did talk about it, but you know me, I don't remember anything. So yeah. I watched the trailer and I was like, this feels like they've established all these characters, and I'm pretty sure these characters aren't from the live action films. I don't think this is an animated extension of that. So where the heck did they come from? And that's when I looked into it and found out, or maybe rediscovered Camp Cretaceous, depending on whether we talked about it or not. And that's what I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So this is like building on established characters who have already been introduced in a previous production. So that was somewhat relieving, because otherwise I was like, wow, they're going in hard with this, and I have no idea who any of these people are. Kind of like if I were to jump into a brand new season of Doctor Who, having not seen anything in the last like 8 years of Doctor Who, I'd probably feel a little out of touch.
You could probably jump into this season, I'm gonna guess, and be fine. We got another trailer number two for the new Doctor Who. It looks good. It looks fun. It's not quite as catchy as the first trailer, because you know the first trailer had some great like music to it, and this one's more generic. But also gives you a little bit more of the plot. And also turned me off slightly, because apparently one of the aliens they encounter are talking babies, and I have never, ever thought that effect worked well.
I wish they all looked like the dancing baby from Ally McBeal. Like, that was just it. Like, that's like they have lines, but their mouths don't move. Like, it's just them doing that little wiggle dance. I'm doing it for Ariel right now. Y'all can't see, but I'm doing it.
Which you need to do, because I've never watched Ally McBeal. I know I need
it's,
to.
I mean, you would recognize the animation if you saw it, because Ally McBeal didn't invent it. They pulled it, and it was used like everywhere in the 90s. But anyway, yeah, that's my useless contribution to this Doctor Who story.
It looks good. I've also decided that the Doctor says he's gonna keep Ruby safe. In both of the trailers he says that. He promises it. And we know, because news came out, that that actress is not a long-standing companion. So my theory, what I'm going to guess, and again this is not a spoiler because I don't know if it's true, I haven't even read it, is that he actually goes, no, this is too dangerous, I'm going to drop you off at home, so sorry, bye-bye, and leaves her and finds somebody else he cares less about.
I mean, that's possible. Like, my fear is that they're going to do what countless other stories have done, which is, let's create a sympathetic female character and then put her into danger and or kill her, simply for the purposes of giving our male protagonist a reason to have an arc. Like, that's my fear, but I hope that they don't fall into that very common trap.
I'm not fearful of that. Yes, the companions do get into trouble, but just as often they solve the problems for the Doctor, or are the people who are saying, no, we need to do this, when he's saying when the Doctor is saying, I shouldn't say he, because the Doctor has had many iterations, when the Doctor is saying, no, maybe we should leave.
I agree. I remember I watched a video once of like, it was like an extensive video of what happened to all the Doctor's companions. This video is like an hour and a half long, because there've been so many, And there's a significant number of them that end up in a much worse place than they started when they started hanging out with the Doctor, like a lot of whom are living impaired, let's say.
Yes. Yes. And some of them are not women. The Doctor had many companions.
Yes.
But the Doctor has also, up until Jodie Whittaker, been an imperfect character who maybe doesn't, who loves humanity, but it's still kind of disconnected from it in many ways, in my mind. And so, you know, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know where I was going with
but
that.
Yeah, I don't mean it as a full criticism of the series as a whole, just that I remain unconvinced as to this particular companion's safety by the end of her specific run with the Doctor. Hopefully she does end up being safe, and this isn't just a way of, hey, we got to make this character who is really kind of sassy and fun loving and groovy sad. How do we do that? Hey, I know. Let's give him a sympathetic companion and then kill her. Like, that's what I have. It feels unfair to say, because I also know that the people who are creating the show are more than aware of that trope. And it's hard to believe that they would indulge in it while also being aware of it. So I'm hopeful that maybe they exceed my expectations.
Also, this iteration of the Doctor does have a sadness under there. They all do. Even all of the happy Doctors have had, like, an underlying sadness. I used to say that, I might have said it on the show for any very long-time listeners, that David Tennant and Matt Smith were like, or no, it was... David Tennant and Christopher Eccleston were like two sides of the same coin, whereas, like, Christopher Eccleston's Doctor was usually sad with moments of happiness, and David Tennant's Doctor was usually happy with moments of sad, but they were all working off of the same memories and experiences.
Yeah, that's true. Like, every incarnation of the Doctor is, at its core, the same character. So there should be certain consistencies throughout, even though, like, the manifestation may be very different. I also just think of, it's funny because when I think of David Tennant, I didn't mean for this to become a Doctor Who cast, but when I think of David Tennant's Doctor, I think of a character who has a really deep-seated rage powering him that is under the surface most of the time. So you don't see it from episode to episode, but you realize it's always there as the series goes on, and he lets it kind of escape where he like will actually deliver really terrifying threats to villains on occasion, which is not something you would typically see from the Doctor. And so some people actually say that, like, David Tennant is a lot of people's favorite Doctor. Ariel's favorite is Christopher Eccleston, because she had a crush on him, but also because he's a genuinely amazing actor and he did a great job. But but a lot of people's favorite Doctor is Tennant, and I've heard some people reference him as the angry Doctor, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. All of the really good Doctors kind of do that. I'm trying to think of the other one that I really liked. It was the old
Peter
guy.
Capaldi.
Yes. I also really liked him. Not all of his, it was his last arc, his last season series, was the best, I think, but I thought he was a really good Doctor, even when the stories might have failed or his companion, I didn't care for his companions as much. Some of the time, Bill was great. I look forward to this. I was going to say more and I don't remember what I was going to say. At all.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I recommend watching the, like, the three-part miniseries they did with David Tennant and Donna Noble, like, last year. And then the Christmas episode that came after that with the new players. And see if you like it, because it's a very different feel. And it does well referencing old stuff while making you understand it as a new viewer. But it has a very different feel, and I really liked where they went with
it.
So if you were going to jump back into Doctor Who, I'd say give that a try to see if you like this new vibe that it's
got. Would you recommend also, because I never saw any of the Peter Capaldi episodes, but I really like him as an actor. Would you say that if I were to try and watch that, I should just jump straight to that his final series as the Doctor?
Maybe. I would have to go back and look at the episodes. I've always said that Supernatural and Doctor Who are kind of, unless you want to follow the through arc of the madness of the Doctor and like watching David Tennant get progressively
angrier,
creepier. Yeah. That it's one of those shows where you need someone to pull out the good episodes for you and just watch those. Unless there are like through lines and they bring up old monsters from like the very original series too. But unless you super care about that, just have someone cherry pick episodes for
okay.
you. But yeah, I just really liked Peter Capaldi's take on the Doctor mm-hmm. a lot. So I will let you know where you should start if you want to give
cool.
that a
that's,
try.
That's, I'm glad that we were able to have this conversation that everyone else can listen to.
Yeah. I assume most of our fans who are our friends who are fans of Doctor who listen to this show have watched the series. But if you're also like, I don't know where to start in Peter Capaldi.
That would be a really good episode, honestly, Ariel, is that I would love to do an episode with you where you just give me kind of your list of episodes, cherry picked episodes for the various doctors, for saying like, if you want to know what I think of as sort of the most compelling or best episodes, these are the ones I would suggest you check out if you were curious, but you were overwhelmed with just the vast number of episodes that are out there. I think that would be really cool. I would love to hear that.
I do think it'll vary from person to person because like, controversial opinion, I think the Cybermen are the scariest monsters in Doctor Who. And many people think that it's the Weeping Angels, or I don't know many people who think the Daleks are the scariest.
That's because until the modern era, a staircase could defeat the Daleks. But in the modern era, they do show that they have thrusters that can allow them to go upstairs. Cause that I saw that episode where I was like, okay, that's clever. Where you're actually addressing the joke that a staircase could beat the Daleks.
Yeah, there was a really good episode of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor that dealt with the Daleks that I quite liked. It was kind of Groundhog's Day-ish.
Cool.
Yeah, so that would be a fun thing. I don't know how many people would like to listen to that, but I'm happy to do that.
No, I think that, like I said, I think that'd be really cool. It would be kind of like, I'm trying to think of any show where I could do the same thing, where I could say like, here are the episodes I think, like maybe Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I have a feeling that most of the episodes I would cite are the ones that anyone who's familiar with the show would say. Like Hush is, I think, one of the best episodes Buffy ever did. Once More with Feeling, which is in a way the opposite of Hush. Because in Hush, for most of the episode, no one is able to talk. And then Once More with Feeling, it's their musical episode. But like, I have a feeling that a lot of my suggestions would be pretty much what any listicle online would say. But I think that would be really cool. Something that I don't know if it'll be cool or not, because honestly, I've been so burnt out on the Star Wars, is the animated Tales of the Empire that's coming up. We got a trailer for it. Tales of the Empire, I think, tells two different stories. And we saw a little bit in this, I thought the animation looked good. I thought that it had an interesting dark tone. But I am burnt out on Star Wars, so it's also hard for me to get excited about this, especially since, once again, we've got like Darth Vader showing up. I mean, you don't see him in full, but there's no mistaking who it is. It's Darth Vader. And I'm like, are there any Star Wars stories that don't tie into this specific era and involve the Skywalker family? Because I'm so tired.
I think there are some books and some comics.
Well, there is an upcoming series that takes place 100 years before the Phantom Menace, but I mean, that's still not quite enough time in my book.
The Ewok Adventure.
Yeah, they just don't address anything. That's not the same.
Yeah, I watched this trailer. Honestly, it was a little slow for me for what it was. it very quickly lost my attention the first time I tried to watch through it. I think some of the characters showed up and some of the locations showed up in Mandalorian either season two or three.
Well, and General Grievous is in there. And of course, he's killed off. Wasn't he? I think it was in the second of the prequels where Obi-Wan faces off against him and kills him, essentially. So, but if General Grievous...
Is Thrask in there?
Thrawn. General Admiral Thrawn. He's in there too. Yeah. Which isn't... Yeah. Because then you're like, okay, there are characters here who, and my familiarity with the characters, you've got Grievous, who's from the prequel era. So that's when Darth Vader's just Anakin. He's not Darth Vader yet. Mm-hmm. You definitely have Darth Vader. He does show up in the trailer. You have Thrawn, who I'm familiar with him after the fall of the Empire, because the original Thrawn trilogy took place after Return of the Jedi, where Thrawn is kind of bringing the remnants of the Empire back under control to have it sort of rise again. But that doesn't mean that Thrawn's only active before the events of Return of the Jedi. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of time that is spanned in this trailer. But again, it's two different stories, so that might be part of it.
Yeah. I've been meaning to go and watch the cartoons and give them a shot. I've seen like bits and pieces, but I haven't watched them fully through. So maybe this will be a good compendium to that. Lastly, I don't mean to rush us off a topic, but we are running long.
About an hour and a half at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. Olivia Wilde and Margot Robbie are producing an adaptation of a comic book done by the Deadpool people called Evangeline.
Evangeline.
Sorry. About an angel who wears very little clothing, who fights.
A female angel who wears very little clothing, because that's the way things were done in the comic books back in those days in the 90s. I want to say that it was co-created by a model who modeled for Vampirella as well. So, Evangeline is a sexy schmexy looking character who does kick butt type stuff and is kind of an angel who was cast out, who is now kind of an avenging spirit for good, more or less. That's kind of the high level, you know, look at this character. So I think that's interesting, like the fact that this character is coming out when we're getting the new Deadpool movie. I bet that's part of it. Like, it's looking into this guy's work and saying, what else is out there that we could potentially use and elevate? I don't know how well it'll do, because the stuff in comic books that plays with semi to total religious themes has a mixed success rate when it comes to adaptations, right? Like Lucifer did pretty well as a TV series, but what was the Keanu Reeves? John Constantine. Constantine, like, I enjoyed Constantine the movie. I thought it was actually really good, but
I enjoyed the TV show.
I don't think I ever saw the television show, but I loved the film. But
it was short lived.
Gotcha. Yeah. So in both cases, like, it wasn't something that really stood out or lasted the test of time. I mean, people who love them still love them, obviously, but it's not like the film Constantine launched a franchise or anything like that, despite the fact that there are some incredible performances in that movie. I mean, you got to watch that film if you haven't seen it. I'm not saying it's the best thing that was ever made, but considering what it was, I was really impressed. So my hope is that if this does come out to be a thing, Evangeline, that it ends up being kind of an exception as opposed to the rule, where the sort of religious related stuff from comics just hasn't played as well. Even Lucifer, which ran for several seasons, I think was more of a cult show than anything else. But but you know, we have some other stuff, like Sandman has some religious relationships in it as well and has done pretty well. So
the TV show was a part of like the Arrowverse, like the WB Arrowverse. But it was, I enjoyed it. And in fact, the character ended up, after it got canceled, going on to Legends of Tomorrow for a few episodes.
Yeah, I want to say there was even a Lucifer crossover with those, the Arrowverse Maybe. Characters too. Like, I remember seeing clips on YouTube. That was my experience, because I never got into those shows. But I was like, wait a minute. I recognize some of these people and I recognize some of the characters they're playing, but I'm pretty sure they're from different shows.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved the crossover stuff. Anything that WB did crossover wise, I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, it was funny because like the WB was, I think, handling the DC crossover stuff way better than the films did.
Oh, I agree. And I fell off of most of the shows before the end because I thought they were stronger in the beginning. But I still think that they handled all that stuff better. I wonder with Evangeline.
I know it's hard to say.
Yeah. If it's amazing, mainly when I'm being a lazy speaker, which is something that film is tiny little bunny trail. I when I started acting in film, I was told that I over enunciated. It's a stage voice acting thing that you do. And so when I do film work, I'm conscious, less so now. There's more of a switch I can turn that I don't enunciate as well, because it can seem
unnatural
acting, even if you are like genuinely feeling your feelings and not putting on an act, it still comes across that way. But it has affected the way that, like, when I do speech to text on my phone no longer understands me very well. Jonathan, smack me if I'm ever speaking super unclearly, but, I wonder if coming off of Barbie, if Olivia Wilde's, if Margot Robbie and Olivia Wilde are going to keep Evangeline, in like the male gaze arena,
right,
or if they're going to update the character.
I hope they update, unless they use it to make commentary, in which case I can understand that. But like, I feel like, if you look at comic book covers, particularly from the 90s, but it's still a thing now, it was so often that any female character was treated like a cheesecake model, right? Like, it's always in these weird positions that most humans can't actually do, and really like emphasizing things like the butt or the chest region, like that kind of stuff. And obviously there's been countless commentaries and jokes made about it, but it continued, it persisted to be a thing. And there's a very delicate way to handle that, where it becomes something where it's a woman's way of expressing herself, and it's like fully through her own agency, and she's doing it for her own reasons, and it has nothing to do with the male gaze. But it's hard to do that in a way that's genuine and isn't actually a guy behind the scenes saying, I kind of want to see what she looks like if she wears this tank top, right? Like, it's a really tricky thing, and I don't want to get fully into it. And Ariel, I know you feel very much the same way. Like, there is a way to do this where it's empowering. It really is empowering, and it's not... It's not demeaning or objectification. It is empowering. But that is a hard thing to do, and it almost never works if it's a dude who's in charge of doing it. So the fact that it's two women who are producing, maybe they could do a better job of that. Obviously, as producers, they're not necessarily the ones calling the shots on a day-to-day basis, though. So I don't know, but... we could have a full episode just dedicated to the male gaze and how complicated that is.
We could. Yeah. I mean, it goes into, you know, the trope of being, of women being told that they need to dress a certain way to not attract a male gaze or to tempt people, or, and into, just stereotypes. Yeah. It's a whole conversation. Margot Robbie co-produced on Barbie though. Yes. Right. So, and that turned out pretty well. But it was very tongue in cheek about it. It was like self-referential. I don't know the right word. It was very blatant in its making fun of that.
Yeah. So it's doable. It's just like, it's really, it depends on who else is on the creative team. We should also say that as we're recording this, this is a project that doesn't have a home yet. It's not like there's a studio behind it. So we can't even say that this will definitively become a thing, but that the initial things have started. But obviously, like, there are tons of projects that get started in Hollywood that never go anywhere. It's possible this could be another one, but it is an interesting choice. Olivia Wilde, also interesting person in that, like, her reputation is a little up and down as well, right? Like, it's not, it's not 100% positive. So
yeah,
especially with the Don't Worry Darling stuff. I'm not going to go into that either, but
yeah. Yeah. That's another topic for another day. As far as it is, this could be a two-part episode, because it's
so long. It's going to take me probably about 3 hours to edit. So that's going to be a fun time. Yeah. But yeah.
So,
but yeah, if y'all out there, if you're interested in us having these conversations, let us know. I mean, some of y'all might be like, please, no, I've had enough of these kind of talks. I don't want you to, my absolute favorite podcasters of all time, to go down that road. That's fair too. We want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely do. Just like we heard some of you asking for mashups, which we do intend on bringing back, though this week I thought it was going to be a 30-minute episode, and boy, howdy. So Jonathan, if they do want to tell us these things, how?
Okay. So you're going to have to go and get a Cheesecake outfit. I'm sorry. I don't make the rules. I'm just reporting them. You're just going to have to find something that's really flattering for you and put that on. And you're going to have to go out and strut in public, and you're going to think of it as empowering, even though other people might be looking at it from a totally different perspective. And at the end of the day, when you've gone through all of your experiences, both good and bad, and you're weighing what this all means, you're going to turn around and I'm going to say, hey, do you mind if I take a picture? And you say, okay, but only if you answer my question, and I will begrudgingly answer whatever it was that you wanted to ask me.
Yeah, and if you don't have the sewing chops to make the outfit that you really, really want, you can reach out to us on social media, on Facebook and Instagram and Threads and Discord. We're Large Nerd on Collider. On Twitter/X, we are LNC_podcast. You can also email us. Our email is largenerdronpod@gmail.com. And all of our show notes, they're currently up to date, woohoo, will be up after this episode airs on our website, as soon as I figure out what kind of funky art I'm going to make for it. And yeah, we do love hearing from you. Thanks to everybody who's been active on our Discord lately. It's been a delight. Until next time, I am Ariel. I need to get a sandwich cast in.
And I am Jonathan Cheesecake Strickland. The Large Nerdron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.